Welcome to Conscious Corner with Vanity. My name is Vanity Reed Dieterville. I'm a native of Charleston, South Carolina, a junior political science student at the College of Charleston, the lead podcast intern here at the Office of Sustainability, and a transgender woman of color who's forced to take a critical look at the intersections of her everyday involvement. I'm here to bring awareness to you about personal, social, economic, political, and environmental initiatives at the College of Charleston, which are more commonly referred to as the five pillars of sustainability. And I hope to highlight these initiatives for you through the sound of my voice. Hey folks, welcome back to another episode of Conscious Corner with Vanity. I am your host, Vanity Reed Dieterville. This is the second episode in the row when I don't have any featured guests on with me today. But again, I'm going to be reflecting on something that's a little bit more personal than the topics I have been discussing on past episodes. So today, since I haven't really gone into my identity with much detail on this podcast, I want to take the time in this episode to do so. So I'm just going to be talking about navigating life as a transgender person in the era of Trump. There has been a lot happening within this administration that has incited and emboldened a kind of prejudice and racism, sexism, homophobia, transphobia that I don't think has been unleashed in recent times. And I think it's just important that we as citizens of this great nation we had greatness in this nation before he came along with the notion of us trying to make it great. But these emboldened prejudices, it's just interesting. And I think all of us should take a look at the many ways in which they have manifested. So I'm going to, I tie this to my personal preservation. So personal sustainability and being mindful of my positioning socially in this nation. And also to political sustainability, noticing flaws and points of entry for which change must be effected in our political and judicial system. I learned recently from the Southern Poverty Law Center. If you all aren't familiar with SPLC, you should definitely go and get more familiar with the Southern Poverty Law Center just to learn about some of the activity that they track. And that specific organization tracks not only hate crimes, but hate group activity. And they look at that change over the years and make correlations and data, compile comprehensive data in order to make inferences about what hate activity and hate crime looks like in specific areas of the United States and what inferences we can draw from that. One of the main things that the Southern Poverty Law Center stated was that it was the fourth straight year of hate group growth. The fourth straight year. So 4 years ago from now was, let's see, it's 2019. So that'd be 2015, right before President Trump was elected and then inaugurated. So the fourth straight year of hate group growth. A 30% increase roughly coinciding with Trump's campaign and presidency following three consecutive years of decline near the end of Obama administration. So we noticed, or the Southern Poverty Law Center noticed, that there was a decline in hate group activity and hate crime presence nearing the end of the Obama administration, and then it rose again as the Trump administration went underway. So I think that's just really important to understand what it looks like, what the violence looks like. One of the ways in which transgender communities have been feeling the wrath of Trump is recognizing the policy blows that have been going on and tentatively impacted against the community. So one of the first proposals policy-wise that Trump stated was that he wanted to ban all transgender people from the United States military because of their robust Medicare or medical costs and transitioning and how it causes some sort of overt and overwhelming disruption to all other officers in the military. And so he wanted to ban all transgender people from enlisting and discharge those who are currently transgender or transitioning that are active in the military. Many people don't know, but this recent appointing of Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court was in fact one of the pivotal turns in this decision being upheld. The Supreme Court earlier this year in January lifted injunctions against this policy proposed by Donald Trump. There were injunctions that were imposed by lower appellate courts because they felt like this in some way violated the constitutional rights of members of the LGBT community who were inside the military. And so the injunction allowed for legal proceedings to take course to discuss the legality of the policy. Once Brett Kavanaugh was appointed, then we have a 5-4 decision to lift those injunctions and temporarily allow this policy to take effect. And this is why realizing appointments like Brett Kavanaugh can become so very dangerous to really actualize these kinds of harmful policies. Suddenly, you know, in the blink of an eye, this could become true. And so, more recently, the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, because this policy was at an appellate stage, set aside the ruling of U.S. District Judge Marsha Petchum in Seattle. Now, Judge Petchum was apparently one of 4 federal judges to rule against Trump's policy. But the reason this Court of Appeals set aside her decision was because even though she stated, and I guess because she stated this, she stated that she felt personally that this policy violated constitutional rights of some sort and was given the statement that she didn't handle this policy with enough deference. And so she didn't speak to it with enough magnitude and respect and seriousness that she should have been dedicating it to or to it. And so her decision being set aside allowed for a temporary victory to be handed to Trump. This was just one more effort in making this policy actualize into something real and something that we all should fear for this nation. But the fight is not over yet. Legal proceedings must still happen, but it's just critical for people to understand that it has been pushed that much further into something that he always wanted. Now, banning transgender people from the military is not the only or the greatest concern me or any other transgender person within the community should be concerned about. Every day we have to worry about violence, just walking down the street, getting to jobs, being in our own homes, and dating and romance and intimacy. Just most walks of life or most aspects of life a trans person has to be concerned about their overall safety, and more times than not has to look over their backs to ensure that that safety is not jeopardized. So it's been interesting looking at the violence against transgender people. You know, this month is Pride, and I only felt right that we take this time to acknowledge some of the most vulnerable people within the LGBTQ community. You know, Pride is supposed to be a very celebratory month, but I haven't been feeling celebratory about it, specifically because of the deaths that I've been seeing, and specifically because the deaths that I've been seeing have been fellow Black transgender women, overwhelmingly. There have been some Afro-Latina and Latinx transgender women, but overwhelmingly, most of them are Black. And so recognizing that this hate continues and in some instances becomes more rapid is critical in understanding what kind of protection and change we need to be striving towards. So I felt it only be right if I pay homage to the beautiful women who would have their names and their lives stripped away from them in the years 2018 and 2019. So I do apologize. I should have given a content warning at the beginning of this episode to prepare anyone who was not expecting this kind of content to be aired. But just know that, in my opinion, it must be done. It must be done. I have to pay the respects to these women, because this is the kind of work that's necessary for our cisgender allies to recognize what kind of support and help we need. So in 2018, there were somewhere around 26 transgender people fatally shot or killed by other violent means. And this data is reported by the Human Rights Campaign. And so I'm just going to start off the list. Christina Lee Steele Nudslian. She was 42, found dead in her home on January 5th, 2018 in North Adams, Massachusetts. She organized and produced the Miss Trans New England and other pageants and was loved and known by many in both the local and national trans community. Vicky Gutierrez, 33, a transgender woman from Honduras, was stabbed and had her body set ablaze inside her Los Angeles home on January 10th, 2018. Friends described her as a young trans Latina immigrant woman whose warm smile would give anyone comfort. Celine Walker, 36, was fatally shot in a hotel room on February 4th, 2018 in Jacksonville, Florida. It was not known for several days that Walker was trans, because local police claimed to not refer to victims as transgender. Investigators are still looking for a suspect in her death. Tanya Harvey, 35, was fatally shot on February 6th in Buffalo, New York. A friend of Harvey's expressed her condolences on Facebook, writing, "I knew her since I started transitioning. She was so sweet and loving." Police have confirmed that they are looking into the incident as a possible hate crime. Zakaria Fry, 28, went missing in New Mexico in mid-January. Her body was found later 40 miles outside of Albuquerque on February 19, 2018. Albuquerque police arrested and charged Charles Spies with two open counts of murder. Fry's loved ones shared condolences on Facebook, with one friend saying, "You were my older sister. You took care of me and loved me like family. I'll forever love you. I'm sorry." Felicia Mitchell, 45, was shot and killed outside her home on February 23rd in Cleveland, Ohio. On April 10th, Cleveland.com reported that a warrant had been issued for the arrest of Gary Sanders. Sanders was charged with aggravated murder in Mitchell's death. Her longtime partner, Shane Mitchell, described her as funny and kind, and that everyone loved her. Amaya Tyree Berryman, 28. She was fatally shot at a local motel on March 26, 2018 in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Few details are known about the crime, and police report that they have no suspects or persons of interest at the time. This next one hit a little deep because it happened in South Carolina. Sasha Wall, 29. A transgender woman of color was fatally shot on April 1st, 2018 in Chesterfield County, South Carolina. The FBI is assisting with local investigators and are analyzing phone records and collecting DNA evidence. Donovan Dunlap, a friend of Wall's, expressed condolences on Facebook, writing, "I will miss you, my beautiful sister. I cannot sleep. I hope they find who did this." Carla Patricia Flores Pavone, 26, was found choked to death in her apartment in Dallas, Texas on May 9, 2018. Dallas police arrested 24-year-old Jimmy Eugene Johnson III on May 17, 2018, charging him with Flores Pavon's murder. It hurts a lot. You were a good-hearted person. Sister, fly high. We will remember you with love. Your beautiful smile will stay with us. That was posted by a friend of Carla on Facebook. Nino Forsten, 36, was fatally shot in Atlanta on May 13, 2018. City police were nearby executing a traffic stop and rushed to the scene, but Forsten later died at the hospital. Gigi Pierce, 28, was fatally shot on May 21st in Portland, Oregon. When officers arrived, they tried to administer aid, but Pierce died at the scene. Roxana Hernandez, 33, passed away on May 25th while in custody of the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, also known as ICE, after fleeing violence and discrimination in Honduras. After an autopsy report strongly indicated Hernandez was beaten in ICE custody before her death, the agency is falsely claiming its press release announcing her death constitutes its reports and disputing the accuracy of eyewitness accounts of abuse from detainees held with her in custody prior to her death. Antasha English, 38, was fatally injured in a drive-by shooting in Jacksonville, Florida on June 1st, 2018. Diamond Stevens, 39, was found shot to death on June 18th, 2018 in Meridian, Mississippi. Catalina Christina James, 24, was fatally shot in Jacksonville, Florida on June 24, 2018. Keisha Wells, 54, was found dead with a gunshot wound in her abdomen in the parking lot of an apartment complex on June 24, 2018. Sasha Garden, 27, was found dead with signs of trauma in Orlando, Florida, early June 19, 2018. Vontaysha Bell, 18, was fatally shot on August 13, 2019 in a neighborhood of Shreveport, Louisiana. Dejanay Stanton, 24, was found with a fatal gunshot wound to the head on August 30, 2018. After an autopsy, her death was ruled a homicide and the investigation is currently still ongoing. Shantae Tucker, 30, was found with a fatal gunshot wound in the back in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania on September 5th, 2018. London Moore, 20, was found dead of multiple gunshots in remote area of Northport, Florida on September 8th, 2018. Nikki Enriquez, 28, was one of four women killed in September in what local officials describe as a serial killing spree, allegedly carried out by an intel supervisor for the U.S. Border Control. Sierra Minaj Carter Frazier, 31, was fatally stabbed and her body left behind an abandoned building by a man with whom she was arguing on October 3rd in Chicago. Regina Denise Brown, a 53 Regina Denise Brown, a 53-year-old trans woman of color, was found dead in her burning home in South Carolina on October 7, 2018. Tydee Dansbury, 37, a black transgender woman, was fatally shot in Baltimore on November 26, 2018. Few details are known about the circumstances of her death. Kiana Mattel, 35, a black transgender woman, was fatally shot in Detroit, Michigan on December 7, 2018. Those were just the deaths of trans women in this nation that have been reported for 2018. And so now I move to the women who have lost their lives in 2019 thus far. Dana Martin, 31, a black transgender woman, was fatally shot in Montgomery, Alabama on January 6, 2019. Reports stated that she was found in a roadside ditch in her vehicle and pronounced dead at the scene. Jazeline Ware, a Black transgender woman, was found dead in her Memphis apartment in March 2019. Her death is being investigated as a homicide. Ashanti Carmen, 27, a Black transgender woman, was fatally shot in Prince George's County, Maryland, on March 30, 2019. Claire Legato, 21, a Black transgender woman, was fatally shot in Cleveland on April 5, 2019. Malaysia Booker, 23, a Black transgender woman, was fatally shot in Dallas on May 18, 2019. Michelle Tamika Washington, 40, a Black transgender woman who was fatally shot in Philadelphia on May 19, 2019. Paris Cameron, 20, a Black transgender woman who was among three people killed in a horrific anti-LGBTQ shooting in a home in Detroit on May 25, 2019. Chynell Lindsay, 26, a Black transgender woman who was found dead in White Rock Lake, Dallas, with signs of homicidal violence on June 1, 2019, according to Dallas Police Department. Chanel Scurlock, 23, a Black transgender woman who was found fatally shot in Lumberton, North Carolina on June 6, 2019. And more recently, Zoe Spears, 23, a Black transgender woman who was found lying in the street with signs of trauma near Eastern Avenue in Fairmont Heights, Maryland, and later pronounced dead on June 13, 2019. I just wanted to take the time to recognize and to lift up the women whose lives have been stripped from them in order to honor them, because they are the reason why women like myself continue to fight on. And so, brutality against and the death against transgender women continues. And we know that those women won't be the only names on that list. And that, who knows, maybe within another year, there will be another or a few more transgender Black women specifically who have their lives taken from them. You see, this is where I draw the disconnect between the overall LGBTQ community and the experiences of transgender women who are Black. Society has been structured against us for a long time. And I don't have the answers as to what we can do besides further policy protections to ensure that our lives don't go in vain. But I believe that we need to take the time to acknowledge the ultimate sacrifice that they paid. And so there's a story of another transgender woman of color in North Carolina. Her name is Kanautica Zeri Brown. And she had the last of her gender affirmation surgeries in 2017. Later that year, she was sentenced to prison in North Carolina for a few offenses. And so Kanautica had changed her name years ago, and she had already completed the final of all of her gender affirmation surgeries, so she was classified as a postoperative transgender woman. However, the state of North Carolina chose to house her in a male prison and issue her men's clothing and referred to her as a dead name. So for those of you who don't know what a dead name is, once a gender nonconforming or a transgender person legally changes their name to align with something that better fits their gender identity and expression, the name from which they changed from, that they no longer refer to themselves as, is called a dead name. And it is not anything that we should refer to them as. In fact, it should never be brought up. It's actually bringing up someone's dead name is more times than not, the preface to some of the most heinous attacks and murders against transgender women. Violence often ensues against trans people after someone dead names them or misgenders them intentionally or non-intentionally. And so they had been giving her men's clothing and forcing her to stay in a men's prison, despite presenting and being a woman. And so it took a lot. It took calls to the State Department of Justice and making sure that they understood that this was violating her rights, despite the fact that she was an inmate and that this goes against the Prison Rape Elimination Act. PREA is a set of standards which aims to protect transgender people, specifically inmates, from sexual harm and housing assignments based on their sex at birth. So it aims to allocate things, assist with mental health, and make housing inside a prison align with what the person's current gender identity is, not what they were assigned at birth. And so the fact that the state of North Carolina refused for so long to house her in a woman's prison and give her woman's garments and forced her to share showers in front of women and undergo the harassment and the ridicule that she had gone through thus far was probably some of the most grotesque state-sanctioned violence I've heard of in a while with respect to Black transgender women. Kanataka understands that she's an inmate, and she understands that she has to pay her time and serve her sentence, and there's nothing about that that she's rebutting. However, she wishes just to be treated and respected as the women she should be housed with. And everyone out here feels like that's exactly what should happen. So the calls from activists, whether grassroots organizations or individuals, and Rally for Justice in her honor have impacted some kind of change, because the State Department of Safety in North Carolina announced that they will transfer Kanataka to a women's prison by August 22nd, 2019. So we couldn't be any more thankful for that, so she doesn't have to face any more undue violence and hardships than she already has to deal with while serving her sentence. And then we want to talk about someone who died recently in police custody. The death of Laylene Polanco Extravaganza in Rikers Island. So Laylene was an Afro-Latina trans woman who was a member of the iconic New York House of Extravaganza. I don't know if you've all have heard me, but I am in the iconic House of Escada. Although I live in South Carolina, my chapter is in Western New York by way of Buffalo. And houses are an extended network of chosen family, of support, strategy to push you towards a greater means of life, and, you know, just a family unit. And Laylene's house, the House of Extravaganza, is one of the most prominent houses in ballroom culture. And so to hear that one of the daughters of this esteemed house had been passed away was very saddening news. And so it was said that in 2017, Laylene was arrested on prostitution charges during what was called an undercover cop sting. And then she was issued a bond years later after having gotten another minor offense of $500 and could not pay the bond. So she sat in jail because she cannot pay the bond. And this is where we see bond reform and it needing to take a really critical and radical change from what it is now. Because it was said to, it was believed that Laylene had a condition that caused her to have seizures. She sat in her cell because of her inability to pay the bond and ended up unresponsive in her cell. And now we have demands for justice by her family and organizations, but we have no further updates that have been made. And so I mentioned all of this in today's episode to tie it back together to Pride Month and what Pride means. Pride was started off of the resistance to police brutality. And at the front lines of that resistance was transgender women of color, whether it be Afro-Latina, Latina transgender woman, or Black transgender woman. It was transgender women of color who stood at the front lines to resist police brutality and overall violence for their spaces and their communities. And we see Pride becoming this bastardized, corporate-influenced celebration this day and age. And I feel like sometimes we've forgotten the message of the literal blood and tears that it took for us to experience the kind of liberation that we have right now. But then looking at news articles and reading the latest occurrences, it seems as if we haven't really, the times aren't really too far removed from what they were 50 years ago, since we're so up in arms about celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall Rising. We should be recognizing what differences and what similarities between then and now we're still living through. And so that's some of the reason why I haven't been feeling as celebratory this Pride Month. I've been feeling a little bit more conscious and aware, but I wouldn't say celebratory. And so I would urge you all to really dig deep and figure out within the community who are those that are the most vulnerable and what risks are posed against them in just their everyday walks of life. And then ask how you can be a more intentional and better ally, and how you can vouch and ask for policy protections, and how you can speak up in the face of discrimination, whether it be misgendering or dead naming of a trans person or a person, a friend of yours who identifies within the LGBTQ community. Don't stay complacent in things that you understand are prejudicial, because silence is another form of violence, and it ensues and allows more violence to happen. These are just some of the many ways that you can become a better ally. Read literature from Black transgender women. Read literature from LGBTQ authors. Understand what the experiences of people within that community are. As my friend Tanner stated, do something to gain emic perspectives on what this community experiences, and emic as opposed to etic. So emic meaning gaining experiences from people within the community, and etic meaning observing from outside looking in. We want you to really know what it's like to be in this community and to walk this walk, and just to be mindful. Now, I'm not saying you have to be depressed, but I am saying you have to be mindful and you have to be conscious of what is going on in today's society. And with that, I want to wish everyone a happy Pride Month, and I want to thank you for tuning in to this week's Conscious Corner with Vanity. Until next time. Synergies is a digital platform produced by the Office of Sustainability at the College of Charleston to educate, inspire, and mobilize students, staff, and the greater community to embody sustainability in their work and their lives. We intend Synergies to be a community resource with articles, essays, artwork, podcasts, and DIY projects connected with creating a thriving Earth for all.